All right. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Woke Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Holritz. Happy Monday to those of you that may be live streaming. It's good to have you here. Hope you had a great weekend. And we're going to start off the week strong with an interesting conversation on a topic that we actually haven't gotten into a whole lot on the Boca Podcast to date. 600 and whatever it is, 40 episodes or so now, and 6 years or so worth of content. It's a lot. And we've only ever talked about associate photographer teams relatively few number of times in light of the number of episodes that we've done. So it's going to be an interesting topic, and I think a really important angle on that topic. I'm going to introduce our brand new guest here in just a second. For those of you listening in, of course, the show is produced by Photographers Edit, custom editing for the professional photographer, wedding, portrait, commercial, or otherwise. We got you, especially during this busy season. Let us take care of that busy work for you so that you don't have to. You can focus on the stuff that makes you money. You can sit around and watch Netflix or hang out with friends or family if you want to with that extra time on your hands. Please take advantage at photographersedit.com. All right. Well, on that note, I want to introduce a brand new guest. Make sure you clear your throat thoroughly, Jill. Jill Smith is here with me. Jill, thanks for coming to hang out on the Boca Podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
And I was saying to you before we got started, because you and I have had very little interaction, that it's kind of fun, actually, I think anyway, to get to know our brand new guests on the show with our audience. I get to ask you questions, to get to know you a little bit, your business a little bit better, and the audience gets to know you along with me. So thanks for being willing to just jump right in. We jumped on about 10 minutes before we got started here, and here we are. For those of you that are live streaming with us, I see we've got people joining us. Please don't be shy. Say hello. You can ask questions along the way. One of the benefits, really, of the live stream is to be able to ask our guests questions. So take advantage of that as we get into the topic. And Jill, we're just going to jump right in. For those of you that don't know Jill, if you go to Jill C. Smith Photography, just like it sounds, .com, and the same thing on Instagram, Jill C. Smith Photography, you can check out Jill's work. She's not just here to talk on the podcast. She's an active photographer and a talented one. So you can go check out her work there on those channels. We'll link to that in the show notes at bocapodcast.com. And Sue says hello from Sun Valley. Hey, Sue, thanks for hanging with us today. The rest of you, come on, jump in, say hello. Don't be shy. And Jill, let's just jump right into the conversation. We're going to be actually talking about how building an associate photographer team in part helps with giving us back a bit more freedom and flexibility as business owners. We're going to talk about that more later today, but our show is largely centered around helping photographers build more sustainable businesses, i.e. run a business, but not get burnt out, run a business, have a life at the same time. Besides associate photographer teams, is another big idea that's helping you maintain some of that balance in your life?
Well, I mean, I think that if you're in this, if you're lucky to be in this business long enough, you're going to get to a point where you're wondering, okay, what am I going to do as I get older? Where's the light at the end of the tunnel? You look around at your friends who have pensions and retirement plans, and like, what does growth and scalability look like for a photographer? And I have really tried so many different ways in the past to figure out how I can scale my business. When your business is named after you, like many of us have done, it's hard to like envision selling that at some point, even if you do grow a really big client base. So that has kind of been not something that I was going to do. It started when I got sick in the middle of busy season a few years ago. It was like mid-October, which is peak foliage here in New York. And I got so sick that I was hospitalized and had a concussion and I couldn't even edit. And it was very silly and dramatic, but it totally derailed my busy season. And my husband was like, you need a team. Like, what contractors don't have subcontractors that also come and work with them and take over some of the work? And immediately it was like a light bulb. Like, he's right. I do. This is what scaling can look like for me. I can scale through associates. I can build a team to kind of offload some of that shooting, because you also have to think about wedding photographers. I've joked that wedding photographers have like the lifespan of like a football player, because their jobs are so physical that they really need to figure out how to offset the shooting to others. But family photographers, there's a physical aspect there, but there's also the demand of the weekends and everything like that. When you have a family and a social life, it conflicts with those things. So that that's really what spurred me to do this and why this has been the right fit for me. I am all about, though, finding ways to outsource and be more of a CEO of my business than an employee of my business. And this has been the ultimate way for me to do that so far.
That's interesting. So I don't know if I've ever quite heard this angle in answer to this question, because I've asked some version of this question now for a very long time on the show, on and off anyway. And the idea of considering the genre of photography that you're in, number one, because we are going to get into more details about associate teams, building an associate team and leveraging that for the sake of freedom. But the idea of not just considering the idea of building an associate team, but also the genre that you're in is another interesting aspect to this, because you're right. I shot weddings for over 10 years. And even shooting my 20s and into my 30s, it is a pretty taxing genre of photography to be involved in. So what genre can I get into potentially to kind of stretch out this career? And then as I do that, and of course, as we're going to talk about, how can I then position myself as a CEO to learn how to delegate to, whether it's a team of associate photographers or other contractors, other third-party companies, to make a more sustainable business model? I think that's really something that we need to be talking about a lot more in the industry. It's not discussed enough because so many photographers become almost obsessed with the idea that they have to do it themselves or else their client's not going to be happy, right?
Right. Yeah. And when I remember after my husband gave me that idea, I had a photographer in mind immediately, and I called her up, and she was somebody I had known as a client, and I had seen that she put flyers up in our grocery store to do pet photography as like a side thing. And so I realized that it was something she was interested in. I knew she had good character, and I called her and I said, at first of all, she was like, "Oh my gosh, how could you even think of me for this job? Like, I don't think I'm like, Allie, I'm not a unicorn. I didn't know how to do the things that I know how to do now. And you can be taught how to do them too. Like, there's nothing special about what I'm doing that can't be taught to others or can't be learned by others. We are all really just standing on the shoulders of the people who have come before us. And we're picking and choosing what components of what they've done, you know, embody what we want to do. And then we learn how to do it. So none of us are that unique and creative and special. You know, it's, you know, the amalgam of those things of what makes us up can be unique, but all of these things can be taught to others and should be. We shouldn't be so gatekeepy about that information, especially since most of us got it for free anyway.
I kind of like this train of thought, and we won't spend too much time here, but our culture for various reasons has come to a place where we're kind of overcompensating for, well, number one, insecurities on our own part, whether we're photographers or not, right? But this kind of obsession over how unique and special we are. And while obviously there are elements of truth to that, like many things in our culture, I think we've taken it to such an extreme. And unfortunately, in the photography industry, it's actually hurting photography businesses because we are so obsessed with this idea that we are such unique flowers that nobody else can emulate or mimic. And as a result, we're not willing to give up some of these, I mean, realistically speaking, mundane tasks that take up so much of our time during the week. So it's a really interesting point of conversation. Again, a loaded topic in and of itself, so I won't go too far into that today, but I appreciate you at least kind of stirring the pot a little bit and putting this thought in the minds of our listeners.
Well, honestly, it's actually a really big part of having an associate program is that piece of mindset, the abundance mindset, where it's the first thing that I teach is like, how can you get past all of your fears about silly things like your associate stealing your business or stealing your techniques or somebody emulating your business? Or it's like, think of the most famous photographers in our industry. They sell their secrets and nobody is putting them out of business.
Right.
So that's not going to sink your ship. There's so much business to go around that we can all share it, and there's going to be plenty, and there's going to be more to come, especially if we can find new and creative ways to serve our demographic.
Well, I think that last point that you made is one of the important reasons why these photographers that are sharing their so-called secrets, which in reality, in most cases are not secrets, is because they're continuing to move proactively, right? They may put an idea out there, but if they're good business owners, they're relatively consistently anyway, thinking creatively and thinking forward. So while all these other photographers are taking their courses and coming along behind them and doing the same thing they are, they're already three steps ahead because they're on to the next thing. And so this idea that somebody's going to come in and take our business is a very reactive mindset. The successful photographers in many cases are successful because they are being proactive. They are actively continuing to look for ways to improve and to make themselves unique. And I think that's a really important point to keep in mind as well. I want to leave that alone because really we could spend, and it's a very interesting
topic. So loaded.
We could spend a lot of time there, but we'll keep going. I do want to give a shout out to Casey is saying hello from Colorado. Thanks for saying hello, Casey, listening in. And Clay says, wise works from Jill the Goat. Thanks, Clay, for the kind
Hi,
words. And chiming into the show as well. It's good to hear from you. And thanks for listening and watching the show. Moving on then to, well, really the key topic at hand, which we're just kind of continuing the conversation around building a photography associate team. And by the way, I should mention, and feel free to highlight this as much as you want to through the conversation, Jill, you've got a family photography business, as you just mentioned, in which you've built an associate photography team. But I think a lot of the principles that we're going to be talking about today here are applicable kind of across the board to building an associate photography team, and whether it's a wedding photography business or otherwise, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what differentiates family photography associates versus a wedding photography, like normally a wedding photographer might have associates who are second shooting for them, or they are other wedding photographers who are going out on the jobs for them. And and then they have this team, and it's really a rinse and repeat sort of business. Family photographers, it's something that's done, but it's not something that's talked about as much. And I did find that when I was trying to figure out how to do this for my business, that the information that was out there for wedding photographers was not really applicable to my business.
Okay.
So there were some sort of nuanced things, but I do think that really anybody with any sort of portrait business could take this model and make it work. And I think wedding photographers could take some of the things that I do to help streamline their own associate programs.
Sure. Well, let's talk about some general principles first before we get into a bit more specifics. One of the ways that you're kind of positioning this conversation is that building an associate photography team can bring both revenue growth, business growth, as well as more freedom and flexibility, which both are, right. I mean, the first may be kind of a natural assumption, at least for some photographers. They're like, well, yeah, if I have more photographers on my team, we're shooting more, there's more opportunity to take on more clients and as a result, get more business. But then, of course, you get into the conversation about time and immediately photographers are like, wait a minute, I have to manage a team, but somehow I'm going to have more time. So we're going to talk about how that happens. Let's start first, though, with business growth. And this may be obvious to some, but will you talk about specific ways? You mentioned to me you've got three ways that building an associate team can bring further business growth to the photography businesses out there.
So number one, my associates help me stay in my zone of genius. Have you read The Big Leap?
Nathan. I haven't read it, no, but I've certainly heard this thought process before.
Right. So you're familiar with the idea of your zone of genius, and there's the four zones of your zone of incompetence, your zone of competence, your zone of excellence, and your zone of genius. And your zone of genius is really where you want to be working, and you should ideally outsource the rest. Well, most of us are working in our zone of excellence and our zone of genius, and very often our zone of competence too, and hopefully not our zone of incompetence. But anyway, my associates help me stay in my zone of genius. So by having associates, I can take the things that I can do well, and the things that I can really do in my sleep but don't really enjoy doing, and I can give those jobs to my associates. I can give them the jobs that I also shouldn't be doing, like elopements. And then, of course, things like accounting that I should never, ever be doing, that goes to my account, things like that. My associates also allow me to serve a broader client base. So in the past, where I was constantly referring jobs, like inquiries that I got for elopements, proposals, event photography, seniors, things like that, my associates can handle that. I have a really well-rounded team. Only three photographers, but they're really well-rounded and they cover a lot of bases. So they enable me to say yes to a lot more things and keep those things in-house instead of constantly, you know, I'm not getting any kickback when I when I refer these inquiries to my peers. And I, you know, I have really good relationships with my local photographer friends. But at the end of the day, I am running a business and the idea is to stay in business. So how can I increase my chances of staying in business by keeping more of the work that's coming my way in-house? And then, of course, having more than one person working simultaneously really moves the needle. You know, when you don't have to say no to a job because you're already booked that day and your associate is available, that's, you know, there's obviously a lot of room for financial growth there. We had one instance over the summer where three of us were working a job simultaneously at different places. And it's a nice payday. It was good.
So number one, it enables us to stay in our zone of genius, to focus on the things that we're best at and be able to delegate the rest. Number two, serve a broader client base. And then three, kind of building on that idea, have room to take on more work simultaneously, which
is obvious, but.
Well, it's obvious, but I think it's good. And some of our listeners, regular listeners in particular, may realize that at times I ask what might seem like an obvious question, but I think it's important to state it clearly in some cases, especially for newer photographers who may be listening and they're like, okay, I really want to understand what's behind this business model. So I appreciate you stating it, even if it may seem obvious to some, because I think it's important to be very clear about our intentions and the reasons for why we do things, not only for ourselves, but in this case, to be able to share with others. So let's then get on to we talked about how this can bring additional business, and that's very clear. But again, where it may seem a bit counterintuitive, I mean, literally the title of this episode today is Freedom Through Associates. We're bringing additional freedom through revenue, but we can also get more time back in our lives. That may seem counterintuitive to some photographers because they're like, I'm already so tied up trying to run my own business. The idea of having to manage a team on top of that just seems like it's overwhelming, right? So talk about the couple of ways that this actually does bring more freedom to us as business owners.
Well, you cannot bring additional photographers onto your team if you don't have SOPs in place, if you don't have workflows and automations and just really good systems that are in place that are allowing you to run your business. So if that's your first thought when you're thinking about adding onto your team, then it's time to go back and say, what can I do to make my business more efficient? Because it doesn't have to be a hard, complicated thing to run your business. And I've never outsourced any part of my business without getting an ROI on it. So whether that's editing, VA work, accounting, anything like that, it will always enable me, honestly, to make more money through actual dollars. Or, you know, as you get further along in business, time becomes your currency. And I really value my time. So when I can buy back my time, which that's pretty big for me. So finding ways, first of all, like your foundation before bringing on a team needs to be solid. So you need to have your systems in place. You should have some sort of CRM. And just understand your workflows so that you have a repeatable process with every job that you take on. And then integrating an associate in after that is really easy. But there's a lot of proactive things that you need to do in the process of integrating somebody new. And I want to preface all of this by saying I am an adult with ADHD. I have pretty significant executive dysfunction. You know, I am not somebody who would typically, who you might think would have an easy time with this, but because of finding these systems and figuring out what feels the most organic for me as a person, I don't think there's any one size fits all piece of software or tech or any tech stack that's going to work well for everybody. But what feels right for me and what is the most intuitive for me to be using consistently, then go with that and then build from there.
Okay, so as you're, and I was taking notes here as you were talking too. So it's important to have established systems before even trying to invite anybody on. This could be potentially multiple podcast episodes in and of itself. We've delved into this topic in various ways through the years at the Boca Podcast. Before we talk about, I guess, how this means more freedom. And maybe you were touching on that already, but let's just give like a few quick pointers for those photographers who aren't naturally organized or structured. They're like, structure, I'm an artist. I don't want to think about structure and systems and workflow. Like, I just do what comes to mind, what I feel in the moment, et cetera. What are a couple of steps that those photographers should take to establish the, as you talked about, the SOP, standard operating procedure, or the workflows, the systems, for themselves, so that they establish some baseline level of clarity before they invite anybody else into their business?
Yeah, I would think that if you've gotten far enough along in your business where you're even thinking about building a team, then you probably have some of these things in place. But I was just saying to my husband the other night, who's ultra creative, but is also running a little bit of a business of his own now. He doesn't want to have like a regimented schedule and a day where he does certain batch work and things like that. And I said, you need to understand that these things are actually going to buy you more time for creativity, flexibility, and freedom. Because when your business is running itself, then you actually can step back and then use your brain for the things that you like to use it for your creativity, for whatever you think is important to you. So once you have these things in place, then you can be extremely flexible. Then you can, you know, like you say, you can watch Netflix, you can hang out with your family, you can go to barbecues, you can do things like that. You know, I've never worked less and made more money than when my business had these systems in place. And then forget it, once I brought associates on top of that, you know, now I'm going to barbecues on the weekends, I'm making all my kids' soccer games, and I'm not editing all night because of the systems that are in place for photographers with editing and culling and everything like that. So like where 10 years ago, I was staying up till 2 a.m. and missing out on everything that happened on the weekend that was social. Now I'm making like quadruple what I was making then, but I'm working less. And then, you know, like I said, you put the associate photographers in the mix, and now I'm not even leaving my house as much, which is the way I like it.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking even more tangibly and specifically than that. So what do you think about this? Like if a photographer's like, okay, I've been in business for X number of time and I know how it works for me, but it's all in here. What if they were to just like take it literally a day or even a week if they could just lay out what they do every single part of the way, or even every single step of the way. So they literally get a notebook out or whatever note-taking app that they might use and literally just list out every single thing that they do in a day, and probably expanding it to a week or through the week, all the things that they do in a week, and being super detailed about it. And then going back and figuring out what the steps are to get each of those things done. And it seems very, very tedious. Anything when it comes to establishing workflow, because I have taught workflow quite a bit over the years, Jill, I tend to lean in that direction. It's something that I'm pretty good at, while maintaining some level of creativity as well. But the thing about establishing any kind of a system or workflow is that it takes time to set up front. You know, I've used Evernote. Have you ever used Evernote?
I haven't.
Evernote's a note-taking piece of software that's been around now for probably 15 years or so. I've used it for, I think, at least 12 years now. I have something like 19,000 documents in it. But when I first set it up, my goal was, and this is literally back in like 2003 or something like that, so maybe it's been even longer than that. Anyway, back when I first set it up, I was literally scanning contracts, like paper contracts, and documents, tax documents, et cetera. I was scanning it with a scanner and putting them into Evernote. I would just sit at night, turn a movie on or something, and just start scanning these things in. The idea of that kind of organization just seems annoying and tedious. I mean, it seems that way to me too, as much as I maybe tend to be more organizational in nature. But we have to put the time in up front in order to start that workflow and implement that system. But the flip side of that then is, just to take one example, like Evernote now, if I want to pull up receipts from 2007, I can do that, and I can do it really, really quickly. If I need to pull up tax documents because maybe I get audited or something like that. In fact, I've been audited a couple of times. And as much as you don't want to be audited by the IRS, it was actually a relatively seamless process because I could literally send a link from the folder for these tax documents and receipts to my accountant. They deal with the IRS, take care of the situation. No real big deal because I was organized. But it takes putting that system in place up front. That's the part, I think, where a lot of photographers are like, I don't want to deal with that right now. I have a shoot to go do, or I have to edit tonight, or I have to do this thing, or I have to do that thing. There's always excuses. They're not willing to take the time to do that up front. So making a list and then breaking that list down even further, realizing what the steps are, and almost creating like a manual of sorts of what their operating procedure is, what they do, and being super clear about those steps and those processes, because you can't bring on a team and begin. I know we're going to talk about communication and delegation here in more detail, but you can't even consider taking on a team or even outsourcing editing to a company like my company, unless you're clear about what it is that you do first. It creates all kinds of confusion otherwise, right?
Oh yeah, there needs to be, and I think that's like when you go to set up a CRM or you go to set up any new piece of software where it does require a lot of information and self-reflection from you. We have an entire section with the photographers that I coach on this on, you know, you're reverse engineering everything that you're doing. So yeah. And I think when you're getting ready to outsource anything, making that list is a really good idea because you're going to be surprised on how many things you're actually doing. And then you can go through them and you're like, okay, what do I really need to be doing? Can a machine do any of these things? Can a robot do these things? Can another person do these things? Yep. Which of these things are the things that only I can do? And there's going to be very, very few of those things, by the way. But yeah, you need to be able to reverse engineer your process. And luckily when you're onboarding an associate photographer for a family photography business, the extent of that is really in the shooting and client interaction. So you have to take an objective look at what you're doing during that time, because for my associates, all they have to do aside from communicate with me before and after the session is show up, photograph, and usually there's not a shot list because it's typically a standard family session. But if there is a shot list, they go in with their shot list, they get the shots, they're in and they're out, and they give me the raws back. So what I'm then doing is going through my own work and saying like, okay, what are the poses that I use a lot? What's an efficient workflow of posing that I can teach them that makes sense for them where they can not be dawdling and meandering and wasting time during the session? Because that's, you know, time is a very important thing for family photographers. You're working with dads and toddlers and neither of them want to be there. So you got to be quick. So that's really one of the main things that I mentor my associates on is my posing workflow. And we practice that together. And then I take a step back and I watch them practice it without my input. And then I let them go out without some training wheels for some non-paying jobs. And, you know, there's a whole lot of that that goes into that process. But yeah, it requires you to really self-reflect, to be introspective too, and to reverse engineer and write down and then create a blueprint for them so that other people can take what you do and copy it.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. So, and I know that we were kind of getting into the weeds a little bit. I really like to try to break things down kind of step by step. So we're going to break, for everybody listening in, don't worry, we're going to break this down even further here in just a second. But to kind of go back to the original question, Jill, the kind of the two ways that photographers can think about this as an outlet to freedom is, if I understood you correctly, number one, establish the systems and workflows, the SOPs, standard operating procedures. Right. And then number two, integrate the associates into those workflows. And we're going to talk in more detail right. about how to do that. But would you say those are kind of the two steps or the two ways to do that?
And making sure that you have a well-rounded team too, because with a well-rounded team, then you can really afford yourself to say yes to more, a bigger variety of jobs.
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe if we have time, we can talk a little bit more about what your selection process looks like. Cause I think that's an important part of the conversation. Yeah. But what I wanted to kind of delve into in a little bit more detail today is I was thinking about associate photography teams, building a team, especially for a photographer who's never done this before, what would be the biggest pain points? And from my 20 plus years in the industry as a photographer, a podcast host, I've owned Photographer's Edit now for 15 plus years. We've processed millions and millions of images working with thousands of photographers around the world. So I know what photographers are thinking, what they're talking about, what they're saying pretty closely. And when I think about associate photography teams, the first challenge that I see photographers having is managing the additional moving parts associated with running a photography team. We kind of already alluded to this idea. And so let's kind of talk about that just a little bit. Did you experience that sense of overwhelm at the idea of, I mean, you said admittedly, you're not one who is naturally like the A-type personality, right? You're thinking about this thing and that's going on and whatever. So the idea of taking on an associate team on top of all that you're already trying to juggle yourself, was that overwhelming for you?
You know, actually, no. But because of, because I was intentional, it could have very well been. I started slow. I started small. And I started during my slow season. So when I did this, I did interview quite a few photographers. And once I kind of weeded out who was going to be a good fit, I think that this this part of the process, the recruiting process, is so important and will obviously make or break how well your program runs. Because if you're not onboarding the right people, then you're going to run into a problem sooner or later. But one, you know, I was really intentional. I had an idea of how I wanted this to look. And I know myself, and I knew that there needed to be less moving parts. So I use a lot of automations in my business. I'm sure a lot of other photographers listening do too. So I use a lot of automations, and I was able to figure out ways to use those same automations for the clients who were working with my associates, and then just an abundance of communication. So communication between you and the associate, communication between you and the client, so that everybody is on the same page and expectations are being met. Nobody's surprised or in the dark about anything.
Okay, I was madly taking notes here as you're talking. So I want to kind of, let me actually, because that was my next question really, was what are ways that photographers can minimize that sense of overwhelm? You were already starting to touch on that. So number one was taking advantage of automation. Is that one of them? One of the three ways?
Yeah, my systems. Systems is one of the three ways. Having the right systems in place, and a big part of systems is the automations. And once again, your SOPs. So whatever that looks like for you, can that work well without a ton of friction if you're adding on a team? And then finding ways that the software that you're already using can accommodate a team, whether it's through scheduling, through communication. I've found a couple of pieces of software that work especially well. I'm still looking for a CRM that can handle a whole team the way I run it. So right now we have a little bit of a Frankenstein set up with that software, with that tech stack.
Sure.
But I'm type Z. So I needed to leave very little room for error. I knew this about myself going in. I think if you've fallen down enough as an entrepreneur, then you learn very quickly the mistakes you don't want to make again.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. And I think it's actually a really important part of life in general, but part of running a business is to like make those mistakes and have it hurt a little bit so that you learn. I don't like worrying about things with taxes. I don't like to make bookkeeping any more complicated than it is. So my associates are subcontractors, and they would technically be 1099, but because of the way that I have my clients pay them directly, so my client's retainer doubles as their flat rate, I don't even have to 1099 them. And I'll say this, that I ran over my system with my accountant, and she says, you know, she gave it her stamp of approval. It is good in my region of New York. I would encourage anybody to just go talk to their accountant and make sure that how they're going to do the payment part,
yeah,
it, wherever they live, make sure that it's okay there too.
Managing contractors and making sure that the designations for tax purposes are set up correctly. That's a touchy one. And so that's a good recommendation. Definitely make sure that anybody, no matter where you're at, make sure that you're talking to your local accountant who knows the local tax law and that's set up correctly. But I want to bring it back though. So three specific ways that photographers kind of minimize that sense of overwhelm and this idea of taking on an associate team and maintain some sense of freedom. The first is the significance of automation using and systems and particularly utilizing software. You've alluded to this a number of times already, and I think it's really great because I think it may be at this point more mainstream, but I was amazed at the number of years that I've been in the photography industry where photographers simply weren't taking advantage of software out there. And fortunately for us, the software is either free in many cases, or there's like a freemium version, if you will, or if it does cost money, it's, you know, maybe $10, $20, $30 a month. We're not talking about a lot of money to be able to utilize a system that's going to save us an incredible amount of time. It takes the time investment up front to set it up, no question. But once it's set up, the amount of time we can save as a result of leveraging that software is so important. Yes. So on that note, just one or two, again, it's a topic in and of itself, but one or two recommendations as far as pieces of software that you used for the sake of automation that you would recommend to our listeners.
The first one that I would recommend to anybody with associates is Calendly. And Calendly is... it's my favorite scheduler that I've ever used for my business, unfortunately, my CRM doesn't support it. So I've had to migrate it, and I wish every CRM would just copy Calendly's setup. They have something called workflows. So my associates all have a Calendly link that they update themselves. So they are able to make sure that their availability is up to date, and they collect the money through their Calendly link. So the other thing that you can do there is you can set up workflows. So once somebody books a certain type of session, which would be an associate session with my associates, I get a text message giving me all of the client information. And then I have that now for my own records and then for my own like pipeline. Mm-hmm. So Calendly has been great. And if you are only like one of my associates only works for me, she doesn't have her own business. So she doesn't have to even pay for a Calendly account, because when you only have one event type, then it's free. So otherwise I think it's like $15 a month. It's a great piece of tech. And I know they've won awards for how innovative they are. I think you use Calendly. I think I signed up for this interview with Calendly, right? Yeah. It's a really good one.
Hours of time that I've saved over the last however long I've been using it now, 3-4 years,
right?
Maybe longer, it's really mind-boggling. And like you said, for $15 a month, I mean, yes, it's just an absolute no-brainer, because now I don't have to have all these endless back and forth conversations via text or email or otherwise. Hey, right, does this time and date work for you? No, not really. Mm-hmm. How about this? No, that doesn't really work for me. How about this? In the back, it's ridiculous. And
remember those days?
But this is where I think, again, it's not a natural tendency for most photographers. And actually, major props to you, being the so-called Z-type personality that you are, that you're actually leveraging software like this, because I think most photographers with similar personalities don't tend this way. If we go back to what we were talking about earlier, and we make that list of things that we do on a day-to-day basis in our business as photographers, and we then Google search literally every one of those things that we do. I mean, I'm talking about the most mundane stuff too. There's either going to be a service or a piece of software that will probably cover the bases of 98% of those things on that list that we do on a daily basis. It's just the wonderful world that we live in. Mm-hmm. We just have to think about it even slightly creatively that way and realize, okay, I can go to Google, I can type in, how do I, you know, automate my scheduling? How do I outsource my editing? How do I outsource my accounting? Just simple searches like this, and either software or services or combination of both pop up, and we can leverage those to help us save time. So I love that you're highlighting automation. Calendly, go ahead and mention one more tool that you're using if you don't mind.
I like TeamUp. TeamUp is a nice calendar that multiple people can use. Okay. I share a studio with another photographer, and that's how I learned about TeamUp. Through Calendly or whatever scheduler we use, it auto-populates this common calendar so we can see like, oh, she's in the studio that day, I can't book that day. So things like that, I've started using it now with my associates so that I don't have to constantly ding them to see if they have something going on a certain day. And they can see too what I'm doing. So that's great. And I was just told about Airtable, so I'm going to be exploring that. So maybe the next time I talk to you, I will say Airtable for sure.
Okay, cool. And again, I'm frantically taking notes here. For anybody who doesn't know, if they see me looking down, I literally have a notebook here and I'm old school taking notes with a pen and paper. Okay, so three ways that photographers kind of minimize overwhelm in this process of taking on associate photographers. Number one is automations or the significance of systems. What's number two?
Number two, but I think what the most important thing that we've touched on is the proper recruitment. You know, for me, first of all, making sure the people you bring on are a good fit for your brand. You want as little friction as possible when you're building your team, you know, a thorough interview vetting process, but also trust your gut. If you're meeting with somebody and you know, something's out of alignment there, trust your intuition. Make sure it's not fear, but go, you know, is that my intuition? Is my gut telling me something is off? Is this not going to be a good relationship? Because at the end of the day, this is going to be a relationship and it needs to be a good one if you want it to be successful. So make sure you meet them in person several times before you officially onboard them. And then you can't be a martyr. This is something, go back to this. You can't be a martyr. If there's somebody who you like or you want to give the job to or you want to help support, but for whatever reason, they're just not going to cut the mustard for you, you have to move on. And otherwise you're going to screw yourself later on.
So when you say don't be a martyr, you're talking about like not taking them on just for the sake of being nice, but like go ahead and bite the bullet and cut it off right then when you realize it's not a good fit.
Yeah. What do they say? Hire slow, fire fast. So you really do want to make sure that the people that you bring on, that you give them lots of opportunities to show you who they are and then believe them, right? That said, don't be discouraged. Sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to interrupt. Please keep going.
But don't be discouraged if somebody's not technically there. That's the easiest stuff to teach, right? That's 100%. If somebody can't shoot in manual yet, that's the lowest hurdle that you can have to worry about getting over. It's like the people skills. If you're a family photographer and they hate kids, that's a red flag, you know? So,
good call. Okay, so this is an interesting point, though, because I've had, unfortunately, in the last three or four years or so, I've not had the best experiences trying to hire people. Part of that is that people just straight up lie on their resumes. They turn their resumes in and they've probably taken a template from the internet somewhere, modified it a little bit, copy pasted stuff, made some things sound really nice, and then turn it in. And come to find out, even people, like I can think about one person who worked on our team for some time who ended up working out quite well. Even on their resume, they weren't completely honest about their skill set, come to find out later on. For me, what I've found is certainly kindness, base level kindness, and just with other human beings, that's a great place to start. And you can kind of gauge that pretty quickly, I think, just interacting with them in person. But then the two other things that I think that I found are most important, because everything else is, there could be some BSing going on in the resume, is work ethic. So I'm willing to work my ass off regardless, like it's just gonna happen. Two is resourcefulness. So it's one thing to work hard, but one of the things that drives me crazy, and I've managed teams of people now for a very long time, is somebody telling me or implying that they can't do something. When, as an entrepreneur of 20 plus years now, I know what it means to go to Google or YouTube and type a question in and learn how to do the thing myself. It's not that hard. In fact, it's easier than ever to figure out how to do something. So work ethic and resourcefulness, to me at this point, and being in business as long as I've been and working with all the people that I have, those seem to be the two biggest things in my book, or the two biggest priorities in my book when it comes to hiring somebody, because you're absolutely right. If they have good work ethic and they're resourceful, they're going to figure stuff out. You can help them and they'll make it easier for you as their so-called boss, because they're willing to put the time and effort and energy into figuring that thing out and not acting like a five-year-old needing their mom to handhold them through everything. That's where it gets so frustrating.
And you can kind of just look at their track record to see like, okay, so what's this person's history? What have they been doing? And get a feel for like how needy they're going to be. And I've never been able to put that into words. So thank you for that, because that is exactly what I'm looking for and what I have in my team right now, where I have resourceful women who can like figure things out on the fly. And the thing about family photography too, unlike wedding photography, is that there are do-overs. This is not high stakes. This is very low risk. At the end of the day, if they totally screw the pooch, we can try again, or I can refund, and it's not a $10,000 refund, you know?
Sure.
So nobody's going to take me to court because, you know, I delivered photos where their eyes were closed and they were blurry. So I hope not, at least. So, so finding those people, being able to recognize, that's why I say like, do trust your gut. If something's not right, if you're getting a bad feeling, if your spidey senses are tingling, then why move on in that relationship?
Right.
You know, because it really is important that you can trust it. Everybody wants to feel heard, seen, understood, trusted, things like that. So you want to give those opportunities for your team to see that you do trust them. But the whole recruitment process, and then, you know, the second thing is the mentorship, which is really part of the process, because I've had people start the mentorship and then it's like, okay, now I see where we might run into trouble and we are not quite on the same page right now. So that can happen too. So following them without helicoptering, but standing back and watching them work and seeing like, what can you teach them to get them where you need to be and what can't be taught? These are all things that you need to be able to recognize.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a process. I'm still, after this long, still learning how to continue to be a better manager of people. And we're going to talk more about the significance of communication here as part of that role in just a little bit. But so three ways to essentially minimize overwhelm of taking on a team of associate photographers. Number one, automation or systems. We talked about that in quite a bit of detail. Two, proper recruitment. And then do you have a kind of a third primary idea there?
Yeah, your mentorship.
The mentorship is the third. Okay.
Yeah. So that is it's really important though. And I will say mentorship instead of training, because you can mentor your subcontractors, but you normally train your employees. So be careful with the language you use.
Yeah. It is really a touchy topic for tax purposes. Yeah.
So it's a free mentorship that anybody who might want to come in and be an associate of mine gets to have. And it is thorough. So we start off with a session with, if I have more than one associate who I'm training, we're all there together and they're watching me. And I have broken down, you know, ahead of time what I'm going to do, and I'm teaching them the workflow, you know, in person. And by the way, I like to start with maternity clients for this, because normally that's an adult-only session, because these training sessions, these mentor sessions can take longer. So just if you're thinking about doing this and showing other photographers how to do what you do, maternity with no children is a good place to start. But anyway.
But for the purpose of that mentorship, though, I'm thinking – again, it goes back to, I think a lot of it seems to go back to having clearly outlined your processes for yourself, because then it makes it a lot easier to share those processes with them in that mentorship, right?
Yes. So after I've done that work, I create what I call an associate dashboard, which is a hidden page on my website where that's password protected, where my associates can go and they can see my workflows written out with photographic examples. So they can see how each pose is going to look, and different ways that they can do it, and then the different angles and all of those things, and then how each pose flows into another one before we even go out and practice it live. Because I think that there's all different types of learners, and some people need like to write it on their hand and other people need to really practice it in person to get it. But being thorough during this part and giving them lots of opportunities to make mistakes. That's so important. This isn't surgery, so let them make the mistakes. Let them go ahead and trip a little bit, because like I said before, those are our best teachers, those little difficult moments that kind of hurt. Let them make the mistakes while they're still in the mentorship phase, so that you can really tease out what they need to be working on and emphasize those things. Because after that first phase of mentorship where it's the group, you're going on to one-to-one sessions where it's just you and one photographer, and you're really able to let them take the lead, and then you can kind of like critique them as they go. And then the last phase of that is it's their training wheels are almost off. I let them go out without me for an unpaid job, and then they deliver, and then I can see, are they getting everything? And I get client feedback too from the models for these. Okay. How did that go? So really establishing this, and I do it during my slow season. So I have the time to spare. And like I said, I do these as free model calls. So the families who sign up to do this are not paying anything. They're also not getting anything. They can pay for the photos if they want. But really, the whole idea is for us to be able to practice and experiment and take our time. So that's the whole process that I use. And then once they are going out and they're delivering the stuff for the free solo mentor shoots when I'm not there, then I can really see, are they able to do this when I'm not there? And then how long were you shooting? And did you happen to get this shot? How did it go? Like, did you run into any trouble? And then, you know, from there, then you send them out for the real thing, for the paying jobs. And at that point, you know, the first time an associate goes out for me without me there is very nerve-wracking, no matter who they are, what their skill level is. But after a couple of times of sending them out, coming back, and, you know, the clients are happy and they're happy, they've made good money that day, and it's good. It can be very good, but it takes a lot of trust and a lot of self-reflection first, so that mentorship phase really sets the stage for success for everybody.
Well, and to use this as a segue, and we've got just a few minutes here, so we'll have to kind of move quickly, sure. But in order to be able to effectively mentor, first we have to be clear for ourselves. And that clarity on our own end, because we've seen this at Photographers Edit countless times over the years. Photographers have, because they're used to working on their own, and I've been guilty of this as well, we're used to thinking for ourselves and only needing to communicate with ourselves. So when it comes time to actually communicate how to do something that we've been doing the way that we want it done to someone else, that's a whole different challenge. It mm-hmm. does start with clarity, and that then enables us to effectively train and mentor like you were talking about just now. But this acts as a wonderful segue to, I think, what the other challenge is. One, photographers, I think, tend to get overwhelmed at the idea of adding more moving parts in the form, in this case, of an associate team. But then the other bigger challenge, I think, is learning how to effectively delegate or to communicate. Now, I know that these are kind of overlapping because you already talked a little bit about this process of training your team. But did you have experience in this process of delegation before you took on this photography team? Had you been in management previously to this?
No, I'm just kind of bossy.
Okay.
No, I think that it's just part of my personality to be okay in the leadership role. And I over communicate in general. Okay. You know, I think it's like, you know, the ADHD thing where you info dump and you just like keep saying the same things to people over and over again, like you're worried they didn't hear you the first time. So I know that I'm doing it. And I think it's actually probably a good thing that I over communicate and I repeat myself, especially when it's something that's important. We know that with our own clients, we are going to repeat the same thing over and over again. Here's the location. I'll be in this color car. This is the time we're going to meet. You can expect this to happen. And if things are going well in your business, that's probably because you're doing that. You're setting up clear expectations, and you want to do it in more than one format. So you can do it in a text message. You can do it in person. You can do it in a guide that they get to have, and they can keep a note. I have my my associates all have a note on their phone that I've sent to them, like an Apple note. And it has like the posing workflows, because if that helps them during their session, they have that. So
when you talk though about over communicating, do you see, like, what's the balance though in that? Because I'm guilty of the same thing, even here on the show from time to time. And what I realize is that in a world that is already noisy, where we're taking in communication in one form or another constantly, the idea of kind of verbally throwing up, if you will, on people all the time can ultimately be, I guess, the antithesis of what we're trying to accomplish, which is clarity, right? Clarity in the message that we're trying to communicate. So where do you think the balance is? Repetition, no doubt, like just because of human tendency, it's important to a point. But at what point then does that just become more noise that they have to kind of sift through?
Well, I think if what you're communicating is consistent with the same thing you've been communicating, it's just, you're just reiterating.
Okay.
So I know they're probably getting reminders through automation from the scheduler that they're using. I send them a text too, like, hey, any questions before? I know you got a session today. Let me know if you need anything. Mm. And it's just a lot of that.
Okay.
Also, they're getting paid for this. So this is part of the job. I'm going to do my part to make sure that they're prepared and they're getting what they need.
Yeah.
And I'm ready. I'm receptive if they have an over-communication for me too, if they have questions for me. So that is, I just think it's really important. I like I said, as photographer to client, super important, the communication, even when we're repeating ourselves. People very often miss it the first time if you're just sending an email. It's very easy to miss different types of communication. So making sure that everybody knows what they need to know so that we're not dropping any of these balls that we're juggling.
I like the distinction that you make, though, in that what you're repeating or you're saying a lot of is the same thing. The message is consistent. Because what I've experienced, and then also what I've been guilty of, is that a lot of times when there is over communication, we're actually processing out loud. So we're processing out loud, kind of trying to clarify things for ourselves in front of the other person, the employee, the partner, whoever it is. And that's where we tend to kind of convolute things. So again, it goes back to the importance of being clear about the principles to begin with. Makes it a lot easier to be able to communicate more clearly on the back end. So again, just to kind of bring it back around, because I like to give simple, like very specific, tangible kind of next actions. If photographers have trouble naturally delegating because they don't have a lot of experience doing it for one reason or another, are there a few ways that they can do so a bit more effectively for best results working with a team?
So your SOPs and communication, hopefully you already have these as a photographer. You can apply a lot of the same SOPs that use between you and your client to you and your associates. Practicing diplomacy. So finding ways to have hard conversations, maybe things that might be otherwise coming off as critical, but find ways in your critique to uplift your team. This is so important. You want to make sure that people feel encouraged and confident in the work they're doing for you and comfortable to come to you when they do have trouble. But it, you cannot ignore any times that they need to be hearing hard truths, like, you know, you overexposed, you're cropping people at the ankle, you got to, you know, things like that. And once again, we're not doing surgery here. So it is okay to make these mistakes. At the end of the day, the clients don't really notice the things that we all notice anyway. So it can be really lighthearted,
yeah.
But practice. And this is something that hasn't always been easy for me, finding a way to be diplomatic in my criticisms. So that's why I say practice diplomacy. You really just need to find ways, really be thoughtful about the way that you communicate any hangups that you're having with the work that they're producing or doing. And then make sure that you can have a difficult conversation with them. And once again, if you've established a good relationship with your photographers, with the associates that you have on your team, and you know, that foundation is there, there's trust. You know, I keep saying trust because it is so important. Then you can say things that are hard to say to them, and it's water under the bridge. You know, I have one associate in particular who's really good about fielding difficult. I don't want to say harsh critique, because it's family photography. There's nothing that's really going to make or break your day there, but she's so good where I only have to tell her once, and she never takes it personally. So. But again, that starts with your relationship. I think the third thing is the relationship. And I know that this would be an unpopular opinion in many lines of work, but when you're dealing with subcontractors, I do think it's really important that you have a human connection with your team. I've taken my team out for lunch. We've gone out to dinner. We share things about our personal life, things like that. If I was going to get married again, you better believe that they would be invited. So that's the kind of relationship that I have with my team. And I wouldn't have brought them on if I couldn't connect with them that way. I think you have to have a deeper level of trust and respect. You know, people want to be heard, understood, seen, and it goes both ways. I want that from them too. They care about me and my business. I care about them and their business. And we want to see each other do well. So I trust them implicitly. I can really send them out on a job without having too many hesitations. And I'm also very honest and transparent. They know what money I'm making off of the jobs that they're doing. They know the things that I've told the clients. They, you know, just being totally open, not gatekeeping about how you run your business and the things that have brought you success. You're just establishing a higher level of trust that will enable you to have that, you know, a better level of delegation and communication with them.
So number one, you said SOPs of communication. Did I understand that correctly? Yeah. So can you explain a little bit what you mean by that?
Sure. Yeah. So let your team know what it's going to look like when a job is coming down the pipeline and they might want to take it. So my team knows that I'm going to set a group text. If it's a job that could be taken by any of them, I'm going to send a group text and say, does anybody want, or is anybody interested in this job? Here are the details of it. And we are researching some other pieces of software that aren't text message, but right now that's been working for us just fine. People tend to see a text message first before anything else.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a place as small business owners now where there's a new piece of tech every day that enables us to do our jobs more efficiently. So keeping your ear to the ground about anything that might help you communicate with your team is important. But take a look into the software you're already using, because a lot of these are really comprehensive pieces of tech that you can use in a variety of ways. And very often they would integrate into a photography business that is bringing on a team.
So really what it comes down to, I guess, with that first point is proactively manage the expectations regarding the workflow innate to your processes. Two and three kind of go hand in hand, practicing diplomacy, working on developing the human relationship. I know that, well, and you alluded to this as well, Jill, with my team, if I've established a baseline level of trust, that kind of fine line between having to be direct but also be diplomatic, I can balance that a little bit better with somebody that I've already established trust with.
Right.
And makes it a little bit easier. I tend to be a bit more direct as well. And so I've had to kind of work at my approach over the years with my team. And I'm also, I'm direct, but then I'm also very quick to and willing to admit where I fall short. So my team knows that about me. And if maybe there's a time where I'm harsh and I'll go back and I'll own that and admit to it and let them know that I'm working on it. Like they know baseline what my heart is. And that really helps set the stage for certainly a more trust-driven relationship or trust-driven conversation, especially the more difficult ones.
Yeah, human connection.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that makes... How do you, I guess just to finish up, how do you balance the line or are you even concerned about it between like how personal is too personal with a team of employees? Like, is there a line to be drawn somewhere?
I think it depends on you and what you're comfortable with and what your normal relationships look like. And like for me, the people who are close to me, like and not even that close to me, the people who are relatively close to me, they can expect honest feedback. Okay. And sometimes it's that's how I operate. I don't like to be subversive ever.
Yeah.
Right. So I
there's just too much, there's just too much BS going on in the world. Like people just, the white lies and that you don't, you're trying to, like when you put somebody on the other side of you in a position where they have to read into what you're saying and wonder what you're saying, if it's fully true, or should I read into this, or does it actually mean this other thing? It just way overcomplicates the relationship and unnecessarily so. And it's so exhausting. Mm-hmm. And even people who are in close personal relationships do this. Romantic relationships, for that matter, it goes on endlessly. And it's so unnecessarily complicates. it so unnecessarily complicates those relationships. It's so frustrating. I'm honest to a fault. And that's where I have to, you talk about diplomacy, whether it's my work relationships or personal relationships, I have to think about how I'm approaching the conversation, the tone I'm using and so forth. But then the flip side of that is that people know, because I'm so honest and they know that that's a value of mine, like I'm honest, just what I'm telling you is exactly what I mean. You can look the words up in the dictionary. This is what you're getting. They can trust me as a result of that. And so kind of finding, that just makes a big difference in the relationship. So I'm glad that you point that out.
Yeah, but I don't think that brutal honesty and diplomacy are mutually exclusive either.
Oh no.
I think if you have that foundational relationship where they know, and you can preface whatever you're going to tell them with, say like, "Hey, this is not a big deal. This is something that we can work on, but here it is." And then end that with "But here are the things that went really well." Mhm. If you're telling the truth on all of those things, you can be as honest as you and direct as you need to be while still being diplomatic and without hurting feelings. We all have egos, especially when it's our art. You can take that kind of personally.
Sure.
So
we all have our own baggage too, but I would think like one of the things that I would love to have a filter for of sorts in hiring now would be to hire for people whose, well, you talk about egos. Ego certainly, and of course, insecurities play into that. Like, if I'm having to babysit insecurities of a 35 or 40 year old adult that I'm having to work on the other side of, that's more work than I really want to take on.
Yeah.
Now it's on me again to be kind and to establish trust and so forth, so that we have a relationship that enables that kind of direct honesty when it's needed. But if I have to constantly tiptoe around your issues, it feels like I'm creating more work for myself than necessary.
Right. And hopefully that's something you can suss out in the onboarding process.
Yeah.
Because if it like you said, it's an important value to you to be able to be direct without people, you know, carrying that with them for the rest of the day. How can
as long
you
as I'm not being an ass in the process, that's on me too.
Yeah.
There's a balance to be had. Well, this has been, here's the thing. This is a loaded topic. The idea, talking about bringing on an associate team, even considering the idea and then considering all the moving parts and the processes to create the best possible experience, to try to cover that all in an hour is kind of a hilarious effort, right? So we've only kind of barely scratched the surface. I know that you have and are working on some education around this topic. Do you want to share with our listeners just a little bit about that?
Sure. So right now it's in beta, but it is launching and enrollment opens on Black Friday. And if photographers are interested in learning more about that and considering joining this program, it's going to run from January to March so that you're going to be able to practice this in real time and during the time of year that, you know, I think Q1 is the right time to onboard associates because it's slower for most of us. And it's a nice, you know, it's a good time to be able to focus on it. So you can go to my website, jillcsmithphotography.com/roadmap, and you can get on the wait list so that you'll know about this when it does open on Black Friday. But if this is something that you're just starting to get curious about and you want to learn a little bit more about some of the possible pitfalls that can crop up when you are onboarding associates or building your team, go to my website, jillcsmithphotography.com/scale. And there is a free PDF there for you to download. It is about the 5 mistakes to avoid when you are building your associate team.
Okay, cool. As you were talking, I was trying to pull up those pages. So I'm going to show those on screen here real quick. Oh, so
thank you.
Yeah, jillcsmithphotography.com/scale. And of course, we're going to link to these in the show notes. For those of you that are listening live today, we usually push publish the episode. Of course, it's going out to YouTube and Facebook now. The audio version will be out by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, so Tuesday, November 7th. And along with that, the show notes, if you go to bocapodcast.com. So we'll link to all of this stuff in the show notes at bocapodcast.com that will be out by Tuesday morning, November 7th. But jillcsmithphotography.com/scale. And then the other page mentioned was jillcsmithphotography.com/roadmap. And we will link to both of those in the show notes at bocapodcast.com. Jill, thank you. I know this is a loaded conversation and I appreciate you kind of working with me to fly through that within about an hour. There is a lot more to cover. So you all take advantage of those resources that Jill mentioned. Thanks again for sharing with all of us, Jill.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.